morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this episode of Talking the Blues. I suspect by the time you listen to this, most of you will be off the pitch and making your way home to home first, and then making your way down to the Emirates on Sunday. What an occasion! We're going to get into it now, obviously. George, Andy, your initial reactions. Are you still singing the blues?
I woke up this morning with Spirit of the Blues in my ears straight away, and I have literally been singing it all morning while I've been out working. So yeah, it was a very, very special evening at Goodison Park last night. And it's a very, very special evening that I never want to replicate again. Purely on the fact that the next time the whole ground is as manic as it was last night needs to be when we're presented with a trophy and not when we've fought off a relegation battle. I never want to go through that again. But setting aside that it was the wrong occasion, but the absolute right atmosphere. The atmosphere last night was off the charts. We've had great nights at Goodison in the past. Obviously the Bayern Munich game, Fiorentina, even though we lost, the Dan Gosling derby. You know, I've been to Celtic Rangers matches. I've been to Manchester derbies. I've been to Merseyside derbies. But I seriously don't think I've ever witnessed an atmosphere like that last night. Goodison was as one. It was absolutely astonishing. When people in the main stand are stood the whole game and starting the chanting from the main stand, you know you're in the middle of something that's very, very special, and it was very, very special. I would like to mention the guy who was sat to my left and in the row behind me, who, when we conceded the second goal to Palace, got up and walked out and went home. I would like to say to him, you never leave a game early, pal. Never in all your born days you leave a game early, unless you've got a family emergency or something like that.
Oh, that's because you were singing, Andy.
he might have been annoyed at me typing. But no, seriously, the atmosphere last night was absolutely astonishing. An outstanding effort from every Blue Nose, outside before the game, during the game, after the game. It was astonishing. That's the only word I can think of. Absolutely astonishing. I've never been in you guys know, I've been to Celtic Rangers games. I've been to Celtic European Cup games. I've been to Everton European Cup games. I've been at Old Trafford, you know, for City United derbies, and I hate to admit, I've been to Old Trafford for a European Cup game a couple of times, but last night, that atmosphere absolutely blew me away. It was amazing. Amazing. And nothing but credit goes to the supporters who took it on themselves a few weeks ago to say, sod this, we ain't going down. No matter what happens, we will not allow this football club to get relegated. And by hook or by crook, by blue smoke, by whatever it's taken, banners, new banners, new, you know, old songs being reinvented. We've done it. You know, the fans and every single Evertonian that's been involved in this movement, this, we need to save our club. We need to adopt NSNO. We need to show what nil satis, nisi optimum really means. They got the job done. And every single one, every single Blue Nose should pat themselves on the back for a job not well done. It was exceedingly well done. You know, it's just, I could go on like this forever. You better shut me up. It was it was amazing last night. And it was a privilege. A privilege to be in that stadium last night.
Well said, Andy. Yep. George, your initial thoughts after.
I was envious last night that you were there, and when I finally got home, because I was working, and the first thing I saw when I turned the telly on was DCL scoring the winner. The whole drama of the evening passed me by because I didn't know what was going on. So that's neither here nor there. I think the Everton fans have redefined what it means to be a footy fan. They seem to have. I was looking at something on YouTube this morning. This guy had posted somebody, you know, filming the chaos after DCL's goal and saying, "I'm not an Evertonian, but this is what football actually means." And it is a big moment. It is a big moment. And Andy's right. And, you know, it doesn't need my brother to say it, because we all know that we've done it in extremis and not in excellence. And now we would like to know when the excellence might begin. I was so thrilled for Lampard and his coaching team, but I'm going to give him the headline credit, because I wasn't sure when he came. I thought it was a better idea than Benitez, but that's not saying very much. In fact, not saying anything at all. And he's learnt. And he has fashioned a way for a really poor squad to behave and perform beyond itself to, you know, a ridiculous turnaround last night. I mean, good. I was going to say to you, Andy, what was it like at halftime, apart from the bloke walking out when he scored a second goal? I mean, it must have been horrendous. But they turned it round.
Do you know, actually, it did remind me of the Bayern Munich night, when we conceded to Bayern Munich and we were a goal down at half-time. And that night, I don't think there was one Evertonian inside Goodison Park who honestly believed that we would not turn that game around against Bayern Munich, and we did. Last night was slightly different. I think there were people who were thinking, oh, hell, you know, 2-0 down, it's been donkey's year since we've overturned a 2-0 deficit. But I think Lampard was actually, I think, pretty smart, because not only did he make the decision to remove Andre Gomes at half-time and put Dele Alli on, but he was smart to send Dele Alli out halfway through half-time, and not just in his tracksuit. Dele Alli came out in his strip, so it was clearly obvious to every man jack in the stadium that he was coming on at half-time. He was coming on for the second half. And I think that actually rallied the crowd to say, right, OK, we've got a change coming. Let's get behind them. Let's give it one more go, and let's hope that we can get an early goal and get back into it. And it worked. And I have to say, last night, he got his substitutions absolutely spot on. Dele Alli for Gomes at half-time was perfect. And Andre... Damari Gray for Anthony Gordon on the hour mark was also the right decision as well. So Frank Lampard is learning on the job. But I think just that move to send Dele Alli out without a tracksuit on to warm up, I think that just gave the crowd a lift. And, you know, the atmosphere at the start of the second half was as it was at the start of the first half. Every man jack was right behind the team. And willing to get the job done, and they did. It was magical.
Paul, what was your thought?
Oh gosh, I'm actually having difficulty putting them into words, to be honest. I think I'd have loved to have been there, but unfortunately couldn't. I'm just I'm just blown away by the response of the fans. And I know we're going to talk about the football and stuff, but I just think that has to be recognised. And I think what the fans have done for the first time in a long, long time, and this is not a criticism of the fans, this is just an observation, and it is of the fans, by the fans. Nobody asked the fans to do this, they did it themselves. Is the fans took the football club by the bootlaces and pulled them out of a hole that the club had dug itself. And yeah. I think that's remarkable. I can't think of another example where that's happened in the way that it's happened at Everton. Yes, you know, there's obviously been changes in the management of the football club and management of the coaching squad, and the players, to a degree, responded to those changes. But actually, I think the biggest single factor, individual performances aside, and we'll talk about them, has to be the influence of the fans. And, you know, I think football clubs, or rather fans, get the football clubs that they deserve. And actually, we deserve a much better football club than what we've got, based on what we've seen in the last few weeks. Because I can't think of a response in any sport, actually, whereby spectators, fans, that we often say that, you know, the fans are the true custodians of a football club. Well, if you ever needed any evidence of that, that's what we've had in the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. The fans have recognised the danger that the club put itself in, the lack of leadership, the lack of ability of the club to pull itself out of its own situation by itself. And they've taken on board that leadership role. They filled the leadership vacuum that existed. Yes, there were, you know, there have been words by the club, and there have been words by individuals within the club, decent words by Frank Lampard and others in the lead up to the sort of, you know, the final four, five, six games of the season. But none of them had the impact that of the actions and the words of the fans. And it's actually only Correct. The actions and the words of the fans that gave everybody within the club the belief. And it's odd, Andy, that you said at halftime that there was a sort of a Bayern Munich type feeling. But even though we were behind in the game and up against it, we'd find a way through. I actually felt that myself, although, you know, I was many hundreds of miles away from Goodison. I wasn't panicking at halftime, even though on the evidence it should have been. I had this feeling that the club was going to be pulled through to the point where, not where we've achieved any great success or anything else, but just to the point where the roll of the dice have allowed us to stay in the game for another year.
Yeah.
Now, there's going to be an awful lot of stuff that needs to happen over the summer and almost immediately in order to make sure that we're never in this position again. But that wasn't what last night was about. That isn't what even today is about, really. What it's about is just recognising the deepest of holes that we dug ourselves and how we managed to escape from that situation. And it's down to, you know, however many thousand Evertonians were either at the game, were on social media, doing whatever. And it's just, it's brilliant and it's remarkable. And every single Evertonian has played a part as a custodian of the club in getting us to the point of safety.
Yeah.
And I suppose what that does mean, before we look at the game and look at individuals, what that does mean is that the standards by which the club operates has to be at least as good as the standards that the club that the fans have operated at in recent weeks, at least as effective, and all the effort and all the desire and all the passion and the resulting success in terms of being of not being relegated. None of that can ever go to waste. This is, you know, this is the fire that is Everton was almost out.
Yeah.
As a result of the way that the club had been run for many years, but particularly the way the club had been run in the last 6 years. In the last 2 months, the Everton fans have rekindled the Everton fire, and that fire can never go out again, or never even be threatened to go out again.
Absolutely.
And we have to build on this now, build on this in terms of expectations, build on this in terms of effort. The effort that the fans have put in, and the players and the manager, to be fair, in recent weeks, that this is the new standard. This is what it takes actually to win. We all know that if we want to win in life, I'm getting on my soapbox again. We all know that if we're going to win in life, you know, how much effort it requires to do that. And, you know, that the effort that you have to put into winning professional football is probably greater than most people have to in their own lives. And as a club and as individuals and as fans up till very recently, we'd forgotten that. And it's a good, really good job that the fans themselves remembered that and did something about it. Because by doing that, they then reminded the club that this is what the club has to do. And now the club has to take this lesson. And they have to do what they have to do, which is run the club properly on behalf of the fans, the true custodians.
Yeah. You know, I found myself thinking this morning, Paul, that although at the time it was perceived as being extremely divisive, the 27-minute walkout that was organised by the 27 Years campaign, which, forgive me if memory doesn't seem good, it was the Arsenal game.
Yep.
Whilst at the time it was seen as extremely divisive and it needed to be parked until the end of the season, it actually served a purpose because it did. It, if anything, it was the forerunner for the movement that started, you know, once Frank Lampard arrived and the fans took matters into their own hands. Maybe the 27-minute walkout that wasn't as effective as many people wished it had been was actually the catalyst in the movement that's begun, you know, if you like, the spirit of the blues movement, put it like that.
Yeah.
And I just thought that this morning, you know, rightly or wrongly, you know, that moment against the Arsenal game, you know, was it the precursor to what's happened in the last 5, 6, 7 weeks? And I think it is. Somebody might care to argue that, and that fine, they can have a different opinion. That's just my opinion. I think it was part and parcel of, let's call it, for argument's sake, the spirit movement.
I think that's an interesting point, because actually, at the time of the 27-minute walkout, there was a response by those that didn't agree with the walkout.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, a lot of noise in the ground, and for a few minutes at least, there was a what at the time was considered to be an exceptional atmosphere. Now, the atmosphere that we've had in recent weeks was multiplied by a factor of, you know, many times what happened at the 27th minute. But actually, that was whether you supported the 27th campaign or not. That will, I think, when academics and other people look at this in years ahead, that will be viewed as the starting moment.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because those that were against it, and even those that were for it, then suddenly all got together. And it took a few more weeks, but finally we all came together. You know, great. It was on the back of getting rid of the manager that none of us ever wanted in the first place. Glad to see the back of him. And we got a new manager in. Okay. Somewhat untested, somewhat untried at this level, if you like. But someone who immediately identified with the fans, and he, you know, Frank Lampard, you know, if you like, was not necessarily a final piece in the jigsaw, but he was a big piece in the jigsaw that's resulted in what's become, as you've said, just something that people will study, that how so many people got together, you know, whether it was subliminally or mentally or whatever, we all did our little bit to pull the club through and pull the club away from the mess it had gotten itself into. So like I said at the start, you know, fantastic. Every Blue Nose, whatever they've done in the last 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks, you know, give yourselves a pat on the back, boys, because and girls, because you have saved our club from the ignominy that the current, in inverted commas, custodians took us to. And we never, ever want to go there again.
Sorry, George, say that again.
No, I was only going to chuck some cold water in because, you know, you're asking us how I feel. And, of course, I was relieved that, you know, we can now, Lampard can now try and rebuild with what presumably might be a Premier League budget if he's allowed to spend any of it. But what faith do you have that the board will have learned a lesson from this, that they won't all just breathe a big sigh of relief and go, right, well, we need to, you know, rebrand something. I can't disagree with anything either of you have said, and I'm sure every Evertonian feels the same, but I would like to, you know, I haven't heard anything from the board this morning, but when the chairman stands up to claim the fans as being one of him and something, I shall be poorly. What faith do you have that things are going to change where they need to change?
Well, as the title music of today's podcast said, you know, yeah, all right now. I mean, you know, does one result make everything all right? Well, of course it doesn't. Although the temptation, I think, of some people will be to say that it does, and that, you know, all we need to do now is have a full season of Frank Lampard and his team, and, you know, we'll be okay. Well, if that is the response, then that's obviously entirely the wrong response. And I think that is this, like, the $600 million question, or the £600 million question, in terms of how, you know, or more, how much money Fahad Moshiri has spent. What is his response to all of this? Now, we hear that the football review, you know, is ongoing and already is having an impact in terms of allowing the football people to make more decisions than they did do previously, or have more autonomy at least. And if that continues, all well and good. But, you know, now is the point where Moshiri has to come out and say, actually, he probably won't say it in these terms, but he's going to have to effectively say, I've learnt my lesson. I've recruited really good people now, and I have to leave them to run the footballing side, whilst I, as the owner of the football club, have to address all the other issues that the club has, which is, you know, the enormous losses, which will still continue, although obviously much better that we stay in the Premier League, funding the stadium, and all of the other issues around the growth of the club, around the branding of the club, around the leadership of the club and everything else. That's all what has to now be addressed. But the point being is that...
Let me cut to the chase, Paul, because
yep.
I'm not disagreeing with you. Do you have any faith that that is going to happen? If so, kindly cheer me up, because I can't see any evidence for it. Was he there last night? Did he send a message?
He wasn't there, and he hasn't spoken since early January or mid-January, or was it late? Could even choose. I think it was late January. Whenever it was, it was around the time when Lampard came, so it would be late January. He hasn't spoken since, and we've not heard a sound or a peep from him. And he certainly hasn't attended the game at Goodison since that point. And I tweeted the other day, I thought it was remarkable. I said that, you know, we should be hearing from the owner before what is, you know, a vitally important game. We should be hearing from him wishing the team good luck and acknowledging, in these circumstances, acknowledging the impact of the fans. And we've heard absolutely nothing. And it's what, sort of 20 hours or something after the game, maybe 18 hours after the game. And we've still not heard anything. And that's just very unusual behaviour. Now, I think that means one or two things. First of all, he doesn't quite know what to say, and possibly he might be getting advice as to what to say, and it might come out over the weekend. It might come out after the Arsenal game, for example. Or it might be that actually, unbeknownst to all of us, his interest in the club is no longer there, and he's looking for a way out. And it seems to me, if you were going to ask me dispassionately as a, you know, as a dispassionate observer, if I was looking at another business in these sort of circumstances where the business was going down a sort of, you know, an awful route, going down to looking, staring disaster in the face and then finding a resolution, you'd normally hear from the owners, you'd normally hear from the shareholders, especially, you know, a business with the profile such as football businesses have. And to me, it makes me think that perhaps his heart is no longer in it and he's possibly looking for an exit strategy. And him saying anything at this moment in time might interfere with that exit strategy.
That's the most encouraging thing I've heard since that's a free kick that Damari Gray is going to take.
I'm theorizing here, but if he was, why wouldn't he have said something at this stage? Why wouldn't he have had, given the resources that are available to him, why wouldn't he have had a number of statements ready to be made, depending upon what the results of last night was? So if the results of last night was we'd lost, or that, you know, some sort of message about going to Arsenal and it still being in our hands, or indeed, as was the case, we won, secured Premier League football for next year. Congratulations to everybody. We've learnt our lesson. Frank Lampard's done a great job. A number of players have done a great job, but above all else, the fans have done a great job. We look forward to, you know, a very successful summer, and next season is going to be very different. It doesn't take a genius to put that message out.
No.
Even if he doesn't do it.
Any half-decent PR guy would have written those, and maybe another option as well.
Yeah.
Well in advance.
So the question will be, why hasn't he done that? It can't be bad manners. It can't be that he's that badly advised. Well, actually, it could be, based on some of the other things he's done. But if it is, he is extraordinarily badly advised. If he doesn't think it's appropriate for him to have said something or to have had something prepared, even if he doesn't say it himself, you know, if it's just a press release, it should have happened. And, you know, one of the scenarios I think we must look at is that perhaps he's looking for a way out. And when you're looking for a way out, sometimes saying nothing publicly is the way to go about it.
Fingers
crossed. Yeah.
Can we step back a little bit and just like, let's talk about some of the people, either last night, or because I think one person redeemed themselves to an extent last night. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, in recent weeks, there's been a number of standout characters, hasn't there? If you're looking to name three or four players on the pitch in recent weeks and months, obviously Jordan Pickford, I think, is the standout candidate for recognition of being over and beyond what was required of him.
Yeah.
In recent weeks, his performances have kept us in games when we shouldn't have been in games. Obviously, the Chelsea game springs to mind, but just his overall consistency and his solidity and everything else, I think, is remarkable. And I think it needs to be recognised, and the media and all the other football people need to get off his back and say that this goalkeeper kept Everton Football Club in the Premier League this season, not just by himself, obviously, but in terms of his role as goalkeeper. And Jordan, if you're listening to this from Talking the Blues, we recognise it totally. And I know that every single Evertonian that listens to this podcast will do exactly the same.
Dead right. Dead right. He's been exceptional. I thought he was a bit unlucky with the second goal last night that Palace scored, but he made a couple of good stops in the second half, and there were times he was coming 30 yards outside his area. He was prepared to be the sweeper. And in actual fact, you know, we were a bit critical of his long ball kicking last week. His distribution last night was damn near impeccable throughout the game. He is a one-off Jordan Pickford. I mean, they always used to say, didn't they, years ago, you had to be a bit crazy to be a goalie. And he sure as hell fits that bill. He's a character. There's a reason he's England's number one, and that's because he is the best goalie that England have got at the moment. And I was delighted that Gareth Southgate was there last night, not only to see him play well, but to see Keane play well. And how did he take his goal? But let's stay with Jordan for the minute. He's a very, very good goalie and a character to boot. So let's hope he's a Blue for a long time to come yet.
Well, on that subject, the other person who's been inspirational to me and I suspect to the fans is Richarlison.
Absolutely.
Who must be extraordinary to play with, as this boy just will not stop, just does not stop going, just does not stop trying, does not stop giving. It's his character. I wish I was his mum and dad. I'd be right proud of myself.
It'd be amazing if you were his mum.
in terms of your sentence, long may he stay a Blue, that's a absolute, you know, the now we can turn our minds to those kind of things. That will be a big one for the summer.
Yeah.
But he's been amazing, and if he leaves, he leaves with every good wish from everybody and a great deal of sorrow, and I hope he doesn't. But what a player, what a human being. He's really terrific. And just for me, because I've been, you know, critical, I have to hold my hand up and say that Mason Holgate, I remember at the start of the season saying, I hope he learns to concentrate and raise his level. And the thing that Lampard has done is they've all raised their levels. And the ones that haven't, with the deepest sadness and respect, because I have banged on about him, it's people like Gomez who are finished, it would seem to me. But other people like Iwobi has grown and grown. He must hardly recognise himself from where he was fanning around in early days of the season.
Completely different player to what we had at the start of the season, Alex Iwobi. His work rate in recent weeks has been
everything
tremendous.
You should expect from a professional, Andy.
I know that. I know that, but I think he's actually realised now. With Lampard appears to have given him some freedom in the way he can play, but I actually think he's realised now that he is a very, very strong and powerful athlete. He might not be the tackler that we want him to be, and he might not have the rasping shot we'd all like to see, but his work ethic. And his stamina, he's got a tremendous engine there. I'd love to see how much ground he covered last night. You know, on the distanceometer that they all seem to have attached to them during the game. But if he ran any less than anybody else on that pitch last night, I'll be amazed. He put a fantastic shift in last night, and he has done in recent weeks. And I think he has responded probably as well as anybody to whatever Frank Lampard has said to him, or the way that Frank Lampard has asked him to play or suggested he play. or whatever, you know, Iwobi is a completely different player to the player who started the season, who nobody had any time for whatsoever. And now the crowd have responded to him as well. I think you're right on Holgate. The last few weeks in particular, Holgate has looks like he's coming of age. I wouldn't say he's come of age. I think he's coming of age. He's looked a lot more solid. He played very well again last night, and he was up against a very tough Palace forward line. I mean, he had some weapons out there last night, Crystal Palace. And Mason Holgate acquitted himself extremely well at the back. And it would have been very easy to get extremely frustrated, particularly when we were 2-0 down and start flying into stupid tackles. But he didn't. He maintained his composure and continued to do what was necessary. And his layoff for the first goal was extraordinary, really. You know, you wouldn't have expected that to come from him. But it, you know, Mikalenko's free kick found him, and he put it on a plate for Michael Keane, and he buried it. So, woohoo, well done, Mason.
All right, so I think Pickford, obviously, Iwobi. Let's talk about Richarlison for a few minutes.
Yeah.
6 goals in the last 9 games of the season in a struggling side, where until at least last night he was playing effectively without a proper number 9, or he was playing as number 9 himself, which is not his proper position. I mean, if anybody has ever responded to the fans and responded to the situation, as we spoke about earlier in the podcast, any player, Richarlison has done that, hasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. And He gets Everton. I'm sure he would get any club he played for. I'm sure the Watford fans said he got them when he played for them, but I think he most definitely gets Everton.
I think so. I think there was an article on the BBC website a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
about his upbringing and about the type of character that he was and the struggles that he went through, and you know, how difficult it was for him to get into professional football and how much it means to him to have done so. Mm. And how he uses his wealth now to help other people, etc. And, you know, just the sheer dedication of the guy. And actually, you know, it's not usual to say that professional footballers are good guys, because we don't like to admit that perhaps they might be. But in his case, he just seems to be, you know, to be an all-round good egg in every sense. And that's, he's repaid Everton's faith in him yes. so many times in recent weeks, and the faith of the fans. And that picture of him when DCL scored the third goal.
And he nosedives.
Well... clearly just the whole of the occasion possibly got too much for him, because otherwise why would he have done what he did? I don't know if you saw it, George, but he just dived headfirst across the turf, yeah. like an aeroplane landing with no front wheels. It's just remarkable. And I mean, his response when he scored the second goal was, you know, got up straight away and ran and got the ball and wanted the ball back on. And he must be, George, I think you've said this in the past, he must be a manager's delight.
Yeah. Yeah. It must be fantastic to play with him, to look at him every time and go, oh my God, I'm not quite at that level, am I? Must be inspiring, really. I'm always inspired when I work with people who are better than me. You kind of go, wow, come on, I'll give you a game then. I think he's embodied the fans too. I think he's like Andy said, he's understood what's going on here, and he's given it everything he's got. He gets the honorary knighthood.
So blue, the order of talking the blues. OTTB. I quite like that. I think we should award that.
Over the top, season. Boys.
So, okay, so without stretching it out too much, who else have we got to remember? I think Mikhailenko needs a mention in dispatches.
I was just going to say, Vitaly Mikhailenko, with everything that he's having to go through in his personal life, you know, with what's going on back in Ukraine, I think he's performed I think he's exceeded expectations given the circumstances. And, you know, many people, you know, thought that we'd made a massive mistake in letting Luka Dinia go, which maybe in hindsight we did. But this boy has come in, and it took him a couple of games to settle. But now he looks the real deal. He's an athlete as well. He's got a tremendous engine. And I think he's beginning to add, you know, some offensive traits to his game. You know, obviously that was what we all loved about Luka Dinia, his ability to get forward and cross and take a shot. And I think that is beginning to grow in Vitaly Mikhailenko's game, and good on him. Made up for the
boys. Who's our cover for him? Are we going to bring back Nkunku?
Nkunku should come back from Belgium, yeah?
I hope so, because I can't see what the cover is. And all this endless this year of Ben Godfrey will cover every position, cook, bottle washer, left back, doesn't matter, has got to stop. And, you know, I'm kind of... The one thing I have got some faith in about... Well, one of the things that I've got some faith in about the future is I believe Lampard knows what he wants, because he's played at such a very high level. He will know perfectly well how to sift out of that squad what he doesn't want, what can't progress, and, you know, what he's going to need to balance that ridiculous squad. Mm. And I'm kind of, you know, I'm not looking forward to the cherry picking that will go on for Richarlison and maybe Pickford and DCL and anybody else. You know, that's the name of the game, isn't it? The transfer window. I do have some faith in his. I hope he's allowed and nobody interferes with him, and him and Mr. Thelwell are on the same page, and Mr. Kenwright and Mr. Mashiri and everybody else butts out and takes their agents with them and lets the football people decide what football players we need.
Well, that's the key thing, isn't it, now? You know, any acquisitions or even departures need to be only with the complete and 100% agreement between the director of football and the manager. As you said, you know, chairman, whoever it is, CEO, whoever they are, owner, whoever they are, just stay out of it. Leave it to the people who understand and know what football on the pitch is truly about.
I think Lampard qualifies for that, Andy, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he does understand that. I mean, whether he's going to turn out to be a Premiership winning coach is another thing. But I'm thrilled for the man that he's earned himself the chance to go, there you go, bugger off, Chelsea. I can do the job. And yeah. I felt for him last night. I really did. And, you know, like you were saying about Richarlison, he certainly gets Everton.
Oh, big time.
Yeah, it's lovely that.
Yeah.
Really lovely.
I mean, those pictures... I couldn't believe it when he climbed on top of the boxes, because I was looking. I thought, hang on a minute, that's Frank Lampard jumping about with the fans. I couldn't believe it. And then you see it from the cameras on the pitch or from the other side, and he's there and he's singing along with the fans. That's brilliant. You know, that's absolutely outstanding. That for him.
He's a footy bloke, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, and he understands. He's obviously stood on the terraces. He's played for big clubs, and he's won a lot of trophies. He's been there and done it. Now he's making his own T-shirts. You know, but it was good to see. And, you know, when you see someone like that identify so closely with the fans, I mean, God forbid it had been his predecessor, but you would never have seen him behaving like that.
Well, he wouldn't have got on the roof.
No, that's true. They would have had to strengthen
him. Yeah.
Anyway, let's not keep mentioning him. He's good.
He's gone. I mean, he will come up in the aftermath, the analysis, no doubt, in the forthcoming weeks. One of the really interesting things I think about the summer, and let's forget what the financial position might be, because that obviously still has to be resolved. For the first time, I think, in an awful long time, as a result of what's happened in recent weeks, like the Chelsea game, the Leicester game last night, even going back to the United game at home, we've actually got something to sell to footballers other than we'll pay you more than anybody else will. And I think the experiences of the last few weeks, particularly the games I've just mentioned, should be first and foremost in everybody's mind in terms of, first of all, keeping the people that we want to keep. So when we sit down with Richarlison, the question to Richarlison, the question to any of them, Calvert-Lewin, is where on this earth are you going to experience the same level of adoration as you did last night and in previous weeks? In the case of Richarlison and others, Pickford as well, you put in that. Where on earth are you going to get that bond between players and spectators? Because what you've experienced in recent weeks, if Lampard says it's unique in his professional career, it will be unique for every single Evertonian, every single Everton player. Mm. So from a retention point of view, I think the last few weeks have been massively important. And again, you know, it's another benefit of what the fans themselves have done, although that wasn't the reason for doing it, clearly. But it's also, you know, if we're looking at, I don't know, like, you know, the Spanish league or the Portuguese league or somewhere else, for some player who perhaps doesn't know who Everton Football Club are, a 10-minute video. This is Everton Football Club, and you don't have to have any commentary. You don't say a word. You just switch the video on, and you show Pickford's save against Chelsea. You show the fans singing in the away end at Leicester 20 minutes after the game is finished. You show the greeting of the coaches, you know, for all of the recent games, and then you show what happened last night.
Yeah.
And there are times whenever you're selling anything, there's always a time when you actually don't say anything, when you just, silence is the best closer in any deal.
Yeah, and let the product speak for itself.
Yeah. If you want to join our football club, son, this is our football club. And as I say, for the first time in many, many years, we've got something to sell other than we'll pay you more than anybody else will. Mm. And if that package, which I'm sure they can put together, doesn't persuade a player who is thinking about coming to Everton to come to Everton, then I think they're the wrong player. Because what we should be doing is now, obviously, from a footballing perspective, they have to pass whatever benchmarks are set. But in terms of character, in terms of personality, in terms of what they want out of their football careers, what we should be now looking at is people who want to experience what Everton players have experienced in recent weeks. First of all, on the basis of, this is what you experienced in the situation that we were in, but just imagine what it would be like if we actually get to a winning position.
That was what got me last night, was those celebrations and the outpouring of emotion at the final whistle. In fact, not just at the final whistle, you know, and not just last night, but obviously last night was when it really hit me, was what on earth is it going to be like when we win a cup or lift the league title again? I mean, you know, those scenes last night, before, during and after the game, were, like I said, astonishing. Now turn it round and make it complete celebration with an FA Cup or even a Carabao Cup, never mind a league title. And oh my God, it will be absolutely bizarre. I mean, just, and you're right, Paul. You know, this is how these fans react to winning a game to keep them alive. What's it going to be like when we win a trophy and you score the cup final winning goal?
That there's Richarlison.
So, you know,
Bill, is that you?
That's Richarlison to say thanks for the order of talking the Blues.
It's Bill. Can I just chip in and say it was all me?
Sorry about that. It shows it's live. But no, that's a selling point. This, as you quite rightly say, Paul, just make up the little video of the coaches welcome, the Leicester, you know, et cetera, and then say, now picture yourself scoring the league championship clinching goal or the FA Cup clinching goal, and how you are going to be, I'll use the word, revered by those fans. And if that doesn't sell it, then you're right. They're not the player that we want.
Exactly. I mean, we need the personalities that can value that experience, want that experience, and then use that experience to become better players.
Yeah.
And if they're not moved by that, by what we've witnessed in recent weeks, then they're not the right players, or they shouldn't be the right players for us. And I think, you know, all of these things are the types of messages that have to get to Farhad and Shiri and have to get to the board if they don't recognise them themselves. One would hope with the, you know, wealth of experience, even just by virtue of age, that they would understand these things. But the evidence in terms of behaviour is that they don't. Mm. We have, as I say, we've lit a fire that can be used now, and the club can go in a totally different direction if it's allowed to do so. Not all the problems are resolved overnight, and that's self-evident, but there's a route, there's a pathway now.
Yeah.
To those changes, and in future weeks we will talk about them. Some of the changes, unfortunately, are going to be that some of the players and some of the players that have featured in the last few weeks, probably after Arsenal, will never pull an Everton shirt on again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some of them, you know, being without wishing to be overly brutal, some of them don't deserve to pull an Everton shirt on again, but end of contracts and whatnot, you know, thank you for your service, bye-bye. Because we need to be brutal in, if necessary, in how we go about rearranging this squad and rebuilding this squad. And if players can't keep a level of fitness that we need to play at least 30 of 38 games a season, you know, then there's going to have to be some hard decisions taken, because we clearly can't afford to carry anybody any longer, and with whatever financial predicament we may or may not be in come the transfer window in the summer, there's going to have to be some wheeling and dealing done.
What's your projection, Paul, as to how much handbag there is going to be come the opening of the transfer window?
I'm going to do like a special podcast on that, so I'll probably be doing that at the end of next week.
Right.
Okay.
So once the game is over on Sunday, just put the final touches to it, and I'll put some stuff out. I don't think it's going to be substantial. Look, I know, obviously some wages are going to come off in terms of, you know, some of the people that are going to be out of contract, and that's helpful. But such are the accumulated losses over the last 3 years that we still have to be mindful of them, and As a result, we're not going to be in a great position going forward. But yeah, I'll talk about that in more detail. I think that's part of the overall. Okay, so where do we go from here? And actually, you know, there's been an awful lot of talk about, yes, we need to change, we need to do things differently. But actually, there's been very few people who've actually said how we do that differently and what we do differently. And I think that's part of actually how much money we've got to spend. Because if we take the approach that we've taken in recent years, where we buy expensive players or we pay players more money than they're worth in terms of salary, then we don't have that many options because we don't have that much money to spend. If we take a different approach, using some of the benefits that we've just been talking about, and we buy cheaper players, hungrier players, players who recognize that actually there's a bit more to playing football and to enjoying playing football than just what goes into your bank at the end of the month, then we obviously have more options available to us. And again, I think that's part of the culture that has to be built within the club in a very short period of time. And it can't just be that, don't worry about it, Farhad will send us another check. Because as we've seen in the last 6 years, Farhad sending another check just means that we get the wrong players into the club and we have the wrong culture that exists within the club.
It's like going out and buying another spade to keep deepening the hole we've already gotten into.
Well, yeah, or, you know, it's like buying expensive kitchen knives, and you know they go dull after you've used them a couple of times. You throw them out and you get a new one instead of sharpening the blade. You know, there's so many different analogies that you could use in terms of the waste.
Certainly is. But in a perfect world, which Everton clearly is not, but in a perfect world, the question of how much salary is going to be offered to people that we might want should come within the remit of Thelwell / Lampard, right?
Yeah, they should have an idea as to what profile of players that they want to buy. So such is the data analysis capabilities within football now, that you can say, I want a 20-year-old who's played in the Belgian league or played in the Swedish league, Scottish league, whatever. They're going to play in this player. We're going to give them a 4-year contract. What is the competitive salary? And there's enough of that data out there now, and there's enough companies that can provide that data that you can get a very firm handle on what a 21-year-old Patterson should be paid. Mm. Yeah, just using him as an example. So
he's a very interesting example because, you know, one hopes we're going to see something of him next year.
Yeah. And, you know, my understanding of what, when he came to the club is that he's actually being paid more than what his market rate is currently, or what his market rate was when he came here. But that was because we were doing things, dare I say it, using the Farhad mythology. It's just throwing money instead of working. Like in any negotiation, there's two ways you can go about it. You can work very hard as a negotiation to get the very best deal for yourself and for the other party. Or you can be extremely lazy because there's enough money in the bank, or you think there's enough money in the bank. There isn't, but you think there is because the guy who's providing it just keeps putting the money in. And, you know, agree to anything because that's the easy way of doing things. Now, that's a very simplistic way of looking at it, and I'm not saying that necessarily we've done it to that extent, but the evidence is there that actually we've been pretty close to it on many occasions because we know that there are many players that have played for Everton or have been employed by Everton in the last 6 years who've been employed at above market rate. Now, we're not in a position where we can do that any longer, but nor should we be in that position even if we could, because that just attracts the wrong type of people. What we want is young, hungry, ambitious players with values, players that can see what this football club can achieve, as evidenced by the last few weeks and the relationship with the fans. And I really hope, and I'm going to labour this point, and people are going to get bored hearing me say this, I really hope that the people who run the club, and the owner in particular, and it's a great shame that the owner has been absent, because had he seen this firsthand, as against getting Bill's version or Denise's version or seeing it in the media, it might have made him recognise actually what is most important to Everton Football Club, and he might have become a better owner from that experience. As I hope, Bill and Denise have become a better chair and a better CEO as a result of seeing this and recognising that what has happened is not down to their actions or the actions of the club or the board or very few of the executive team. Some individuals within the club have been very responsive and have helped enormously in terms of fan relationships, doing things for fans in recent weeks. That has to be acknowledged. But I hope they recognise that what's happened has been created by the true custodians of the club, the fans, not by the people who run the club. And they may just become better runners of football clubs, for want of a better term, as a result of that.
And our play out music is Dream On. I hope you're right.
Yeah. I think we're probably going to finish now, actually. Unless you guys have got anything that you're burning to talk about.
No, meet us at the Emirates.
Yeah. Okay. I've got two things to finish with, okay?
Okay.
Great.
One is, I came across a quote, and I put it on Twitter, by J.B. Priestley, of Yellow Pages fame, for those that remember those adverts. And he wrote about the Dunkirk...
Whoa. J.B. Hartley.
Was that J.B. Hartley, was it?
Yeah, J.B. Priestley is quite another thing.
No, I know who J.B. Priestley is, but I thought
he ate J.P. Hartley, wondering about, has he got a book about fishing that I wrote?
Well done, George, for listening. I was just testing you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so let's scrub the Yellow Pages. So J.B. Priestley, and I know who he is. When he was writing about the Dunkirk evacuations, and it's on page 452 of Yellow Pages, if you want to look, he said, what began as a miserable blunder, a catalogue of misfortunes and miscalculations, ended as an epic of gallantry. We have a queer habit, and you could see it running through our history, of conjuring up such transformation. Out of a black gulf of humiliation and despair rises a sun of blazing glory. Now, obviously, one's not never going to compare what happens on the football pitch to what happens in the theatre of war. But I thought it summed up Everton's season quite nicely. Yeah. We faced disaster, but we actually found a way out of it. So that was the first thing I was going to say. Second bit, was there's no better way, I think, to finish tonight's today's podcast than actually just playing and saying nothing. Just playing the noise of the crowd when everybody was on the pitch and singing Spirits of the Blues sort of brings a tear to the eye. It's fantastic.
Go for it, Paul.
Yeah.
Gents, thank you so much. Thank you to everybody for listening. And above all else, thank you to everybody that contributed last night and in the last few weeks.